Hey guys, I'm Tyler Hosley, and today somebody asked me in person what Harry Potter house I was a part of. I was like so fucking confused because I don't know nothing about Harry Potter, and I don't know what the house's names are, and it was just weird.
I'll tell you right now, you're a Slytherin, I'm a Slytherin, Kevin is a Hufflepuff.
Okay. I knew you'd make me a Hufflepuff. Screw you, Dave. I didn't get asked what house I was from, but today I did. It's that time of year where wasps are getting more vicious because they're dying and they're getting into my workplace. So my colleague doesn't like wasps just as much as I do. One appeared. We shrieked like young girls. We ran away from the wasp. I picked up the can of spray while running away, took the top off, turned to face the wasp, and sprayed myself in the eye with the wasp spray because that's the direction the nozzle was pointing.
And Kevin says he's not a Hufflepuff.
I know. I'm not doing myself any favors with that. I'm a Hufflepuff through and through.
I'm Dave Gray, and fun fact, I've never read the Harry Potter books or finish the movies. I've read one book, I saw one movie, and I was done. The house names are literally all I know, and this is Raiders of the Podcast. Oh, and I know Rowling's a hateful bastard, so you know, whatever. This week I had a pretty chill week. I watched Hellraiser, which is a classic.
Nice.
I watched Housebound, the New Zealand horror comedy, which, I saw when it first came out, but that was almost 10 years ago. And it's a fun one.
That's been almost 10 years. Yeah. Wow.
Yeah. 2013. So it's getting close. Maybe 2012. I can't even remember now. I think it was 2012, 2013. So really close getting there. What else did I watch? I watched the Paw Patrol movie again, which, you know, I don't recommend to anyone. You know, and if you love your children, you wouldn't let them watch it either. Sometimes you should just sit them down, look them in the eye, and beat them. And I think this is one of those times. It's atrocious. And besides that, this week was the 55th anniversary of Star Trek, so I watched a lot of live streams about Star Trek, and I giggled. I giggled so bad. I forced somebody to watch all of Lower Decks. Giggled. Oh, no, you know what? I forgot something. I watched the 20, and this is another one that's almost 10 years old, the 2013 Evil Dead remake, which is a movie I've seen more than once now. The effects are really good, but everything else is just kind of mediocre, you know? It's okay. I don't hate it. I don't love it like the mainline series. Kind of hyped for the video game and the next movie, though, so yay!
I don't think Alvarez has ever met a person that has an addiction, though. That's for sure.
No. Oh, my God, no. He does not understand fucking addiction.
No.
And then made it the centerpiece of the film. Which is, I don't know anybody from Uruguay. I don't know, like, how rampant addictions might be there. I know a lot of addicted Americans, and, you know, they it's not like that. That's not how addiction works, man. But that's not how being blind works either. And, you know, he milked two don't breathe. So, hint, being blind isn't a superpower.
Is that you done, Dave?
Yeah, that's me.
Sorry. Yeah. I was waiting for some further tangent on blindness.
I'm
still going to end up watching Don't Breathe 2, but I'm as confused as most of us about, you know, why they decided to seemingly take a sequel in that direction. I took a hit for all of us because you guys won't be watching the latest incarnation of Cinderella. And
no, oh, thank God. I have made sure my niece does not even know that exists.
All right.
That's been difficult.
Well, there were things that I thought might work for me, because it was written and directed by Kay Cannon, and she did one or a few of the Pitch Perfect movies. And, you know, I like the Pitch Perfect movies. Cinderella is taking the fairy tale and making it into, I believe the term is a jukebox musical, really, you know, using other hits. And the start was okay. I was recognizing the strains of Rhythm Nation. I was like, let's just start with Rhythm Nation. That's a good tune I haven't heard for a while, even if it's staged this way. They mix it in with another tune. I was like, well, that other tune's not so good, but might be right. Then it just gets a lot worse. And it's mainly worse when it's the younger stars front and center who are the leads. Camilla Cabello is Cinderella. I don't like her. I don't like her singing style. She's one of those very quivery-lipped singers who throws in an extra 5 syllables into every word. And frankly, if you're not Christina or Mariah, then I don't need those extra syllables.
Excuse me, I believe you've forgotten the queen of that. Rest her soul.
Whitney?
The only Whitney.
Yeah, well, true. But they can deliver with that style, in my mind. And I just don't like it as much, Ricky Villacabella, as it. The Prince is played by Nicholas Galitzine, and he didn't really have much charisma or charm. So at least there's some of the older players who do well. Idina Menzel, that's how she's known to everyone still, apart from John Travolta, is the cruel stepmother, and she's all right. Pierce Brosnan and Minnie Driver are kind of fun as the King and Queen. You have a weird selection of British comedians who are arguably best known at the moment for their appearances on panel shows. Like, I don't know if James Corden, because he, also known as the Antichrist, is involved, got them to get his pals while they're on a break from panel shows, but it was very weird to see them turn up.
I think it's funny that you think James Corden has friends.
Well, yeah, that's a good point, actually. Another highlight, there were a few dotted here and there, not many, but Nandi Bushell is there, and I recognised her, but she's on screen for probably about 2 seconds. And I just watched the awesome video clip of her drumming on stage with the Foo Fighters, so I recognised her. Cinderella, not good. Didn't hurt me too much, but not good. Another one that's a lot better, but very strange. I went to the cinema to see Annette.
I watched that. I watched that on Prime. I forgot all about it. Oh, did you? No, okay. I did, yeah.
Adam Driver's awesome in it, I think. I think he's superb, and that's a good thing because most of it focuses on him. The songs from Sparks, basically Ron and Russell Mayall, are intriguing, but nothing really lives up to the fun and most melodic intro part that's called Now May We Start. So that's a difficult thing for it to get over. It's almost like this modernized bizarre opera, and there was a lot of it I liked for it being just so, like, unabashedly what it is, the way things were staged and the theatricality of it was good. But then it's also hard to really care about anyone. And there were one or two interesting things that were too quickly dropped. Particularly, there's a sequence where there are women coming forward, or it tells about women coming forward to accuse Driver's character of some misconduct, and it doesn't really make any impact.
Because that was a fantasy that what's her name was having. That was her fear.
Oh, right.
Right. Yeah. No, it took me a minute to realize that too.
Right. Yeah. The way they stage it, I did think, and because you get this, you know, it works with the character because he's so sort of confrontational and acerbic with.
He's Andrew Dice Clay.
What's supposed to be, yeah, his comedy on stage. So I thought it was playing to, well, this is his past. It doesn't necessarily mean this is who he is now, but oh, look what's happening now kind of thing. Cause, you know, it does feed into, you know, the fact that his character is quite weak and quick to not act too nicely to his partner, to put it mildly. So, I don't know. I mean, it felt like the lines were constantly blurred on some of the things, you know? But it would make more sense if that was her sort of stress fantasy about that.
Yeah, that's her stress fantasy, because he has one like right before it.
Mm-hmm.
And his actually comes true also about her career getting better than his.
Yes.
So, yeah. Yeah, that was her stress fantasy. It was a mirror thing, but yeah, I can see why that would not register.
Yeah, you know, the way it did keep kind of moving sort of to and fro between the mindsets and reality. So there's a lot to, I think, enjoy here, but like you're gonna have to work with it to get the most out of it. I ended up, it wasn't down the middle, but I ended up rating this as kind of an above average film, mainly because I admired more than enjoyed a lot of it. I'd say the start was good. I really liked, there's a main scene at the end that I really liked. Things were always strange with the puppet baby look. But it was certainly, you know, never dull to me. Did you like it, Dave?
No.
Right. Okay.
Okay. Well, here, let me explain why. I really like the director's work, and to me, this is his worst film.
Right.
First, I hate the premise and the whole artifice and is true emotion and it's not. So, if that's working as your central thesis, it doesn't work. It's too long. And Driver, I will admit, the first half Driver is really good, but then the rest of the movie, he and Cotillard are not strong enough singers, and they are not strong enough singers you have to listen to sing for a full 2 hours and 20 minutes.
Yeah,
the dialogue is weak, and a lot of the weird is just try hard after a while. I mean, I like the director a lot. I would fully recommend the whole rest of his filmography. And he's been around for like 30 odd years now. His one right before this, Holy Motors, I will recommend to anyone, like immediately.
I really like Holy Motors.
Fantastic. But this one, I didn't like it. I wanted to like it. Like I respect the attempt, but it's a little too on the nose. The central premise is just stupid. After a while, just watching people sniff their own farts just isn't fun for me. And is 2 hours and 20 minutes of just watching people sniff their own farts.
I've been quite hit and miss with Carax because I really liked Holy Motors. I wasn't so keen on, I saw The Night is Young a while ago, but I also really liked, I think it's Les Amants de Pont-Neuf. My pronunciation, that's probably terrible. But that was really good. So I went in thinking, you know, where's it going to land? And obviously having heard all about it. So yeah, it is what it is. I think I've already heard from some people who love it. But say if you are going to give it a try, it'll still be hard work. I think even if you do end up loving it, I think you would need to work to get the most out of it, or work hard to overlook some things that would more easily put other people off.
Yeah, and I mean, then I wouldn't tell anybody not to see it, but know what you're getting into. You know?
Yeah. Last but not least, I watched a film where Aquaman and Dora the Explorer fight against Big Pharma, and that was Sweet Girl. That's on Netflix. It's a pretty standard action filler. I quite enjoyed it. It's nothing special. It's nothing really different, even though there's a moment or two where it plays out as if it is quite different. It isn't really. But, you know, it was absolutely fine to watch. They're asking Momoa to show a bit of emotion occasionally, so that Isabella Merced is good here, but not as good as she was in Dora, because Dora is awesome and will always be awesomeness lost to the mists of the lost recording. So Sweet Girl's alright. That was me.
I finally watched Wonder Woman 1984. It was okay-ish, I guess. I didn't hate it. I didn't love it. It was too goddamn long, though.
Mm.
There was no reason why this movie needed to be 2 hours and 30 minutes. None. No reason at all. It was just, it was agonizingly long. Pedro Pascal and Kristen Wiig were actually the best things about it. I mean, I like Gal Gadot, but she just seemed like she wasn't into this one at all. And Chris Pine was fine, I guess, even though that whole subplot was just fucking bizarre. The Cheetah CGI was awful, though. I mean, that CGI was terrible. And the action was just kind of bland. I don't think it's Shazam levels of bad. I hate Shazam. But it's just kind of dull overall, which is a shame, because I really love that first Wonder Woman. I thought it was great. This one, eh. It was just kind of there. Definitely like top two worst of the DC movies. Because I'm a DC fan. I love DC, but yeah. And I watched something called Hood of the Living Dead, which I bought at a closing Blockbuster like 6 years ago, and I just never watched it. And that's where I should have left it, at that closing down Blockbuster, because this is complete trash. Terribly made, Uli Lomel levels of Blockbuster horror section trash. So, don't ever watch Hood of the Living Dead, guys. It's terrible. And, that was me. I had a pretty light week this week.
Absolutely. I really appreciate you not, saving that for the show. just the title, sounds bad enough.
Yeah, it was bad. It was very bad. Usually those horror section at Blockbuster was usually pretty bad, but this was like bottom of the barrel trash. So
yeah, but once the word hood appears, it gets really dicey.
Oh, it does.
I've seen that one.
The cover's cool though.
Yeah, that was on Netflix for a bit.
Was it? I'm surprised. Yeah, Netflix. It was bad.
Or maybe Hulu. That might have been one of the Hulu one star movies. I watched it because an ex loved hood horror, so.
I think it's
we
free
that.
Right now, which is not a record. I'm just saying it's on there. But
I should have broken up with her after that, but I didn't. And I live to regret it.
I love hood horror too. But,
oh, yeah, me too. I'm not. It's not the genre. I'm the person that made me watch it. That's totally different.
Yeah, I see you there.
Every other hood horror movie I can think of, off the top of my head, I think I've generally enjoyed. But Hood of the Living Dead, for some reason, that to me just stands out as a terrible title. I don't know why.
Well,
it just
the whole
does.
Of the Living Dead has. Let's be honest. When you see those words on any movie, you know it's probably going to be bad.
Yeah.
If you have Night, you have Return. Return 2, Return 3, and then 8 billion shit movies.
Yeah. Oh, the makeup effects. It was like the director told these 10 people that were playing zombies to dip their face in a pizza and walk around like a zombie. That's what it looked like. That was how bad the makeup effects were. Just like red pizza pepperoni on their face and walk around like shambling zombies. It's bad. It's very bad. Just don't ever watch it.
It is. I think that guy that made it actually, he did something else. I'm trying to remember what. He did something that was like off, like one of the worst things I've ever seen. Because you know how it is.
Was it Hood of the Living Dead?
It wasn't Hood of the Living Dead. Oh, he made Going to Hell, that movie with Wee Man, like back in 2004.
Oh, Jesus.
I think he's still making movies. I mean, the dude, I mean, you got to respect the hustle.
Oh, he's still making movies. Yeah, I'm looking up his filmography right now. He made San Fran Psycho.
Which, you know what? I'm going to watch that just because of the title. I know the movies he makes. I'm aware. I'm going in with my eyes open. This week, we watched the 1965 British-American prison drama directed by Sidney Lumet, The Hill. And the 1983 American epic space opera directed by Richard Marquand, Return of the Jedi, or Star Wars Episode 6, Return of the Jedi. You know what? I'm going to go first, and I'm going to go talk about the movie I want to talk about. You should totally know that this will influence my voting. I'm going with the movie I'm going to start talking about. I'm sorry, T. The Hill, 1965. Set in army prison. Where is it? Libya. Five officers are recently arrived into the care of NCO guard Williams, who has also just arrived and loves excessive punishments. The biggest feature in this prison is a man-made topographical feature called the Hill, which they make the prisoners run up and down and maintain in the excessive heat. New prisoner. Hold on. I got so many notes. I'm trying to. Okay. Former Sergeant Major Roberts of the Royal Tank Regiment, played by Sean Connery, has just arrived being convicted of assaulting his commanding officer. And the staff is very much looking forward to getting their hands on him. It's a movie about what happens when you push a man too far and you have unlimited power and control. And it is fucking excellent. I mean, like, you know, I said who directed it. It's directed by Sidney Lumet. Lumont? Lumet? Lumet. I don't know why I added an N there. Who, you know, did Prince of the City, 12 Angry Men, Dog Day Afternoon, Network. Dude cranked out awesome films. Had a hell of a career. Equus. Oh, man, he did the 70s Murder on the Orient Express, which has long been on my list for the podcast, but it's a little too long. So, you know, you should go in expecting class, and he delivers. The cast is fantastic. This might be one of Sean Connery's best, like by far, especially in that last act. His deliverance of delivery of some of these speeches are just, it feels like a play because it, you know, it is an adaptation of a play from a few years earlier. But it's one of the best film, theater-to-film adaptations I can think of. Connery gives a great performance. Michael Redgrave is the doctor, and he's good. He's a little too limited. I mean, he's... Ozzie Davis is Private Jacko King, and he gives a really good performance. Harry Andrews is the sergeant major in charge that we see the most. He is fantastic. and Roy Kinnear, I think.
I've got Roy Kinnear.
Yeah, Kinnear, sorry. Is one of the prisoners excellent? I mean, the whole cast is just fantastic. Harry Andrews is the sergeant major, and there's not a bad performance among the group. There is just, it's hard to get across some of these things. This is about folks being physically exhausted in the heat, and excessive heat stroke is hard to perform, but they do an admirable job with it. The conditions in the prison are well done. I mean, it's an excellent film. I hadn't seen it before. I thought I'd seen all of Lumet's films, but apparently I was wrong. So I'm going to have to double check that at some point, but full marks, man. I was just totally captivated by this from the start. I'm shocked this isn't better known. It's just excellent. And the performances in that last act. I mean, I'll be the first to admit it might drag a bit in the first two acts, but that last third of the film is all just fire and electricity. It is absolutely excellent. And that's all I'm going to say about it. I'm just going to keep repeating it. It is really good. And it touches on a lot of interesting things that aren't, I mean, you know, they're touched in by most prison dramas, but not generally. But it's an interesting meditation on what happens when you give people too much power and what they'll go through to cover it up. Yeah, this was excellent. Top scores, Kevin.
So, Sidney Lumet has always been a director that I greatly admire. I love so much of his stuff, like Dog Day Afternoon, Before the Devil Knows You're Dead, Serpico, Find Me Guilty. I even like Gloria with Sharon Stone, that forgotten hooker movie.
Oh, I did forget about that one. Shit. That one is not bad.
Yeah, I've always liked that movie. I don't know. It gets a lot of hate, but I've always really liked that movie. This one, I just couldn't get into this one the way that I hoped I would, though. It's a really good movie. Please don't take this the wrong way. The cast is great. Sean Connery is wonderful in this. I agree with Dave. Definitely one of his best performances ever here. He's fantastic. And the claustrophobia feeling in this makes you feel like you're in a fucking nightmare, which I thought was great. I don't know if it was just this week or it was my mood or what, but I struggled to fully get into this, especially the first half. It just started to drag for me a bit until about an hour mark, where then it started to pick up because I thought the last act was actually really good. It's bleak. It's super fucking uneasy. It makes you feel uneasy, which is usually right up my alley. I don't know. I've seen so many of these evil prison guard movies now that they all just kind of feel similar. I mean, this one felt a little different than the norm, but there's some truly captivating stuff here. And I can definitely see some, like, Kubrick. I can see where Kubrick took some inspiration for this, for Full Metal Jacket. But I was just never fully invested a good hour into the movie. So, yeah, it was good. I just wasn't feeling it as a whole. But, yeah, I mean, I would definitely give it another shot in the future. It's just the first hour just really drugged for me. But, yeah, Sean Connery, fantastic in this. So, yeah, it was a good pick, Kevin. I need to watch it again, I think.
I mean, to be fair, I totally understand why that might happen. Because one of the antagonists is heat.
Yeah.
It's really hard to get that across. They try to, but if you don't engage earlier, like that scene running up and down the hill with the gas mask, I could see that being goofy as hell and just totally disconnecting.
Mm-hmm.
And also, I mean, I knew it didn't have enough Ewoks or speeder bikes.
Murder
in it
for bears.
Tyler. Yeah, so so I knew it was going to be a tough sell to T-Town this week. Funnily enough, though, when I mentioned this on Twitter and on the podcast Twitter, I got more responses than I usually get from casual title name drops. So it's a film that the people who know it really love it and all agree that why don't more people know it? And I was like, why couldn't a company like Indicator put out a nice Blu-ray of this? Like, why is it sort of languishing now in this forgotten realm? And I don't know, try to tag some companies and get them interested. But there are definitely fans of this film out there. I don't think it's a film you get many people joining a conversation on to just say, ah, you know, it was all right. Like, it's, there's, for anyone watching this, I think if you, you know, if it didn't grab you entirely, or if you did find the first two acts a bit too slow in places, I think you would still find something that would stand out from the performances or from the finale or, you know, a different aspect of it. I've been a fan of this since I saw it. I think I saw it in my late teens, early 20s, and it was probably on like the Classic Movie Channel. I think it'd been on, and I used to tape random stuff. And then I saw this, and it was fantastic. I've never seen it since. And it's not one that has that exposure. So I'd forgotten it was by Sidney Lumet. You know, I think I'd forgotten that until you mentioned it the other week, Dave, when you're like, how haven't I seen this? I didn't know anything about the writer. It turns out it was the last screenplay from Ray Rigby. So, well, for movies anyway, that's, I think he went out on a high. I don't know if it, just didn't get a good reception at the time. I think this is a great film. I think the cast are generally really good. Harry Andrews is superb as the sort of the top of the leaders. Ian Hendry is good at being pretty shitty, and Ian Bannon is the, you know, the better of the guards. I couldn't remember Ozzie Davis was in this. It's a good role for him. He's very good. But I would go further than you guys. I would say, for me, this is Connery's best performance of his career. And I don't mean that in terms of, you know, we love to see Connery being fun and like Highlander and in The Rock, and he's wonderful in James Bond films. But for just full on acting performance, like, this is across the board absolutely superb. Because when he first appears, he's quite cocky and reticent to discuss things. He continues that for a while, but then he is trying to just get through and do a certain amount of time, and soon realizes, well, that's not going to happen because these people are here and can push and push and push as long as they want. So he's trying to, like, really get back at them, figure out some way to just keep hitting back at them where it hurts. And for them, it's mainly the conflict that arises between dealing with humans one-to-one and going by the black and white print of the military handbook. It's I really think it's, I mean, I think it's easily his best performance. It uses his macho persona in a way that still lets him have that little bit of charm. But you can also see why some of the other prisoners who are put straight alongside him are wary of being there alongside him. It's like, well, he might stir up some shit that I don't want to be caught up in. But then he's generally in the right, and he's there for having done something that is explained later that, you know, gives you the clearest insight in his character as well. And the finale is just superb. It's a mix of really interesting conversations and confrontations and a real almost nightmarish atmosphere if I didn't know this was Sidney Lumet, like, this is the kind of thing where I could have easily watched this over the years, not seen the credits, and thought this was like a Samuel Fuller movie, because it's got that move into nearly full-on nightmare for a section that I think Fuller could do quite well in the dramas that he did over the years.
Quick question.
Yeah.
Did you look up the playwright?
R.S. Allen. I did R. S. not. Allen. I did not look up his other works. I noted the names down.
You will love this. R.S. Allen mostly wrote TV with another writer named Harvey Bullock. Both very influential TV writers. Do you know what shows they wrote?
No.
The Flintstones. Homer Pyle. USMC. The Andy Griffith Show. The Many Loves of Dobie Gillis. Dude wrote mostly comedies. I think he wrote the Elvis movie Girl Crazy. It's just this hard-biting play was, I think, one of his first things before moving into TV.
Interesting.
Yeah, I just always find that interesting.
I get the sense of heat from this. Maybe not as much as it sort of comes off the screen in something like Ice Cold and Alex. I think that has that feeling a bit easier relayed throughout. But I get this quite well for most of the runtime. So I would agree that there was certainly probably more so the middle section is where you feel the drag, because the opening scene, you are meeting all the characters and then they're getting put through our paces. The middle section, it's a bit repetitive in terms of, well, that's going to be their life now, and there are certain characters being pushed to react certain ways, or, you know, perhaps until something particular happens. So I would say that's where the dip occurs for me, but it's nearly a perfect film. And I would certainly put this forward to anybody who doesn't ever rate Connery as an actor. I'd be like, watch his performances. I know he has had other good performances over the years, but he's often, you know, let's admit it, we love him, and he's often Sean Connery. He still has that element of being Sean Connery here, but it also feels like much more of an actual character he's playing, that he plays really well. So I'm glad I made us all watch it.
Oh, this will never get a good release.
No.
It was produced by a company called Seven Arts Productions. Seven Arts Productions eventually merged into with Warner Brothers. And for a couple years, Warner Brothers was called Warner Brothers Seven Arts. And guess who does not care about their classic titles?
Yeah, they don't care about.
Yeah, they don't. Much. I mean, they care about like the handful they can always squeeze for money. Like, they care about Casablanca. They care about Gone with the Wind, but something like The Hill, they'll never give it to Criterion. They'll never give it to Kino. It's going to be locked up in their vault. Until world ends.
I know this maybe sounds really petty, but I'll never forgive Warner Brothers. For many years here in the UK, the special edition DVDs of the Burton Batman films, like that section of Batman films. So Batman Returns didn't have the commentary track on it because it was like 6 seconds cut from it. I can't remember if it's where Catwoman puts the sprays in a microwave or a headbutt or something. But apparently that was enough to throw the commentary track out of sync, or they couldn't have it. But the box always still said commentary track with Tim Burton, and I would buy for the special features. So I emailed an inquiry about this and said, you know, or are you ever going to just change the packaging? And got no reply, and they never changed the packaging. I was just like, fuck you. That's against trading standards, and I'm I'm 20 years old and I can tell you this for a fact, and don't make me call my lawyers because I don't have one.
Yeah. They just don't care, and they're never going to care. I mean, even like HBO Max, almost everything on their classics, it's not, they own something like 100,000 classic titles. And almost everything on their streaming service, which you'd think would be full of classic Warner Brothers. It's just stuff that's on the Criterion channel because they're saying F you to the Criterion. So yeah, well, this will never get a good release. And that's fucking tragic.
Well, moving on to something very different though. Tyler got us to revisit Return of the Jedi, comfort viewing time. Everyone knows the story, I think, but generally, Luke, Han, Leia, the gang's all back together. The Empire are, of course, building another Death Star because the first one worked out so well for them. And there's a big final act set on Endor with lots of, as Dave likes to call them, murder bears.
Murder bears.
Ewoks, yeah. Yeah, I don't have too much to say about Return of the Jedi because, you know, it's good. I think the order for me goes, Empire, Star Wars, Jedi for the original trilogy, but it's easy to see. It's maybe easier to see with Jedi than the other parts of the tale, like Lucas aiming for the demographic, the younger demographic, and having all the merchandise and that in mind. You know, before we had the prequels and that, at this point, it was obvious. It was obvious sort of the way it was going to go. But it's all done really well. The opening section, an extended piece, seeing people try to get Han Solo, free from the carbonite, free from Jabba's palace. You have Luke Skywalker fighting the Rancor, which is superb. It still holds up really well. Is a great creation. You've got the Sarlacc pit. You've got Boba Fett there. You've got crazy little band and weird gremlin guy. That's all really good. The middle section, funnily enough, does drag a little bit because they're setting up the finale. And while the finale's enjoyable, you get the mix of primitive traps from the Ewoks helping the rebels, and you get obviously Luke going to face Vader and the Emperor. It does feel a bit kind of like a repeat of Star Wars, but just building up to more of a one-on-one with Luke there, rather than, you know, him being led around and escaping the direct action. So it's more problematic than the stuff that felt more original coming before it, even though all the Star Wars stuff is really derivative and influenced by other stuff. But it's all put together with polish, and like, I was jealous of my cousins who had the speeder bike toy that you could press a button and it all fell apart. So you could crash it into model trees.
What? I've never seen that.
Yeah, it was one of the little models, you know, all the little figures. Like, it was one of them. You could get.
I remember the Kenner figures. I didn't know about that one.
Yeah. Well, they had that one. I don't know where they got it from. I never had enough. It's funny that I noted down the director's name, Richard Marquand, because I would probably put money on it that you could ask people who directed Return of the Jedi, and 9 out of 10 wouldn't be able to tell you.
But 9 out of 10 would tell you Empire was directed by Lucas, so.
Yeah. But before this, he did a really interesting little strange drama thriller called Eye of the Needle, which is excellent. And he did Jagged Edge, which I just picked up on Blu-ray, and I'm going to watch one day because I don't think I watched it when it was first released. So this may start a little Marquand run for me. So thanks, T. Kasdan wrote the screenplay with George Lucas. I think it's, you know, generally acceptable. Again, I think everything here sort of falls exactly where it should in terms of slightly diminishing returns and a more obvious route to the toys and merchandise and the skew towards younger viewers that Lucas, you know, seemed to want to entertain more than anyone who'd just directly grown up with the others. But I think that's, you know, that's not the worst thing in the world. And it's a fun time. It's a fun way to wrap up the original trilogy. And I will never not laugh watching that little clip with the musical Sting when as Han Solo being reminded that Luke is Leia's brother.
I did reevaluate my rankings after this viewing. You guys want to hear my Star Wars rankings?
Sure.
Okay.
Empire.
That's it?
Yeah, that's it.
That's it, yeah.
That's it. And that's not just the original trilogy. That's the whole... No, that's not true. Let me do the whole series. Empire. Beat, 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 beat. Caravan of Courage.
apologies, Dave. I did want to say one more thing. Sorry, before you disparage everything else that Dee loves. This... When I was saying about the repetition between this and Star Wars, though, and also it feels like there's not that much that feels like, you know, big stakes and a big change. It just makes me more surprised at the savage criticism of The Last Jedi for, you know, not moving things forward. Like, well, Star Wars doesn't always move things forward. It's just there to exist.
Yeah, but to be fair, the last trilogy didn't move anything forward for two movies. And then when they did, they moved it forward in the worst possible way. Just, they even had to know homo people. Anyway, I'll digress. Okay, Star Wars is about, okay, the first trilogy is about three characters, right? And one of them is competent and smart and an interesting character. And the other two have penises. So which two get propped up the most? The two with penises. But they're both, well, useless and stupid and brain dead. Poor Princess Leia. General Leia gets the short end of the fucking stick. She's the only one active during the rescue of Han. Gets stuck in the gold bikini. She's the only one that actually takes out anybody worth a damn in that sequence. And what does everybody remember? The fucking bikini. Then she gets sidelined for the rest. She's actually active on the speeder bike chase because Han can't even take out a single guard without throwing off all attention on himself. It's just... I only partly agree with Kevin. Comment about how this is the one that really is like, oh, buy the toys, because I actually think this starts an empire. I mean, all of Cloud City basically reeks of, hey, now we can sell alternate versions of the old toys. Yay! But it's just, it doesn't work for me. I watched this movie, and it's been a long time since I've watched Jedi. It's been a few years. And I don't think I've ever disconnected more with the movie except when I rewatched the original Star Wars on the show. I remember like being really excited when they'd occasionally show them on TV. Now it's just, I don't know. It doesn't do it for me anymore. And this is just me personally. I know a lot of folks still love them all. And that's cool. I'm glad a lot of people get enjoyment from them. I'm just saying for me personally, the older I get, the less I seem to see the appeal still for the series. Han is terrible. I mean, he is just useless. Luke is useless. They don't even put the camouflage trench coat on the gold guy. If you're trying to be stealth and you have a guy whose knees don't bend in your group in the woods, give him the camouflage trench coat, not the totally useless pilot who should just stay with the ship. Just stay with the ship, Han. I don't know. I like the Jabba Palace sequence. And then the rest of the movie, it just doesn't land for me. I hate Luke. He is the worst because he has no personality. He does nothing. He doesn't even do anything in the finale. Vader's redemption is completely unearned, almost as badly as his fall from grace is completely unearned. And then Kylo Ren's redemption will be completely unearned. I think my problem is part of me wants these to be better. I think Star Wars really, its best stuff is the stuff that got cut. The extended universe did some awesome, awesome ideas, especially once they really embraced the idea they could play with it around the Shadow of the Empire days. And it just, I don't know. Maybe it's because I'm an old 90s geek, but now watching the old movies, yeah, the when it's the miniatures, the effects are awesome, but the added CG is terrible. The characters are, they're not good characters. The older I get, the more Star Wars just feels like a right place, right time thing to me. And the appeal just, I don't know. It kind of slips me by. But now that we've done all of the original movies, we might need to give T his prequel series special soon.
Yes.
Maybe, yeah. Oh, yeah. Did I tell you a couple of weeks ago, I actually watched Mad God, which was the film finally from Phil Tippett.
Oh, how was it?
It's an experience. I really liked it, but he is very much interested in making that whole world and, you know, take you on a journey through it. So, narrative, not something you'd appreciate from the craft and art point of view. It will feel like a slog, but I think you would really dig it. Like, if you love the work that, you know, like we see in Star Wars and Phil Tippett's stuff and everything, he's just been able to really do what he wants in a full movie. Fortunately, it was part of the Edinburgh Film Festival and they did some screens online. So I bought a ticket and I was like, you're damn right, I'm watching this. And yeah, I was happy I watched it, but I felt like I also needed to have a scrub down afterwards and bathe my eyes. It was very, very strange, but awesome.
That's what I want. That's all I'm asking for. Bath. Make me feel dirty after watching your movie. Come on, George Daddy. Daddy Lucas.
And obviously, seeing this, and was it Tippett? I think, did he do the Rancor sequence?
Yeah. He did.
Yeah. Which reminded me that I'd forgotten to sort of bring it up on the podcast that Mad Gods, if you're a fan of stop motion and Phil Tippett's work, then yeah, it's well worth seeing.
You know what really struck me on this viewing of Empire?
How useless
or Jedi?
How useless no, Boba was, Fett is.
Was the no the well no Boba Fett is useless, but the makeups. I you know something I never noticed as a kid was how many of those makeups are just Halloween store masks. Like the mouths don't move. They don't. Oh yeah, the CG. I need to talk about the CG singing lice creature. Which just kind of, I don't know, there was something about it that just kind of made me feel really uncomfortable. There's a lot of racism in the designs of George Lucas's old characters, man. George is a problematic dude.
He's also, terrible. It's kind of a big argument about, I always have the, I've had the argument with people about, you know, taking on board the views of directors, but also in a way, once their film's out there, they can't necessarily, you know, dictate to people how they take the movie, whether it's a message in the movie or, you know, it's how they receive it, whether, you know, these examples, you know, whether you view 28 Days Later as a zombie movie or whether you think the end of 12 Monkeys could be, you know, positive or negative, things like that. And directors will still try and have their say. And they should get more used to the idea that, okay, that's out there. I did that and it's out there. George Lucas would probably give us another 100 special tinkered editions if he could. And someone should just be like, George, it's out there.
Yeah.
Stop.
No, I agree. I will say, I think Mark Kwan... Did I say that right? I didn't. Yeah, no, Mark Wand, is capable. I mean, he does a fine job of directing. It's a shame. He died fairly young. I think he had an aneurysm or an embolism. Something popped in his brain just a couple years after he made this. I mean, technically, I can't fault it. I think my problem very much lies in the screenplay by George Lucas. And,
Kasdan.
But Kasdan is a fucking terrible writer. So I said it. Lawrence Kasdan is a shit writer. He is bad. Full stop. The only, you know, he's got his name on some good films, but almost all of those are co-writing, like, fucking Raiders. Empire. Which he co-wrote with Lee Brackett. I mean, the dude is bad when left to his own devices. And for Jedi, he's left to his own devices with George Lucas, who is also a bad writer. So I think Lee Brackett really deserves a lot more, a whole lot more credit for Empire than she gets. But it's the same with Raiders. I mean, Philip Kaufman is the better writer, but he doesn't get the credit. So, I don't know. Kasdan is one of many shitty white guys that kept failing up during the auteur decades. Solo was shit. He never, ever should have been allowed to make that movie or write that screenplay. It might be the worst Star Wars movie, which is a very low bar to clear. Yeah, I'm sorry, T. It just does not land for me. And I really wanted it to.
It's all right. Isn't Jake Kasdan, Lawrence Kasdan's son, he's also a writer?
He is. Yes, they co-wrote Solo.
Thought so. He also made Orange County, which I fucking love. So that's a great movie. You want to hear my rankings of the entire saga, guys?
I really, really do.
Okay. Now, before I rank these, I don't do number ratings personally. I just never did. But if I did, I wouldn't rate a single one of these under an 8 out of 10. So take that as you will. Number one, Star Wars 1977. My number two favorite film of all time. I adore it and I would die for it. Empire, Jedi, Revenge of the Sith, Phantom Menace, Attack of the Clones, Rise of Skywalker, Force Awakens, Rogue One, Solo, and The Last Jedi. That is my rankings of the entire Star Wars saga, not including the Ewok movies and the cartoons and all that stuff, just the saga. I love Return of the Jedi. And like I told Dave last week, for me, this and the entire Star Wars franchise is my personal cinematic comfort food. It's my favorite film franchise. I just love them all dearly. Those first 33 minutes inside Jabba's palace is just fucking perfect. I love the creature designs, the rancor fight, Solo's escape, the Sarlacc pit. Everything about that first act has this like wonderfully eerie vibe inside that palace. It's like a sleazy strip club owned by a space worm. I adore it. I honestly can't express how much I fucking love that whole Jabba's palace first act. After that, it does get a bit tonally bipolar, cutting between the lighter stuff involving the Ewoks fighting the Empire and the darker stuff with Luke, Vader, and the Emperor in the throne room. But the tonal shifts never bothered me though, because honestly, I like the Ewoks in this. I really do. They don't bother me the way they bother some other folks. I mean, there's some people that really hate the Ewoks. I mean, they're cute. I've never disliked them. They're fine. I love the speeder bike chase on Endor. I mean, the special effects look a little dated now in the chase scene, but it still holds up really well. The throne room stuff is fucking fantastic. I think Mark Hamill is great in those scenes, and Ian McDiarmid is amazing as the Emperor. I love that character. There's so much emotion in that final lightsaber fight between Luke and Vader. I mean, you can almost feel Luke's anger when he's swinging that saber before cutting off Vader's hand. That scene is just fantastic, and the score is amazing. That's some of John Williams' best work, in my opinion. I mean, and one of my favorite things about that final act is how Luke just never gives up on trying to redeem Vader. Even through the mask, I can always see the conflict in Vader throughout the entire ending. I always could. For me, it's perfect. I don't have a single complaint about it. I did watch both versions for this episode, though. I watched the original theatrical cut and the special edition. And while I do greatly, greatly prefer the theatrical cut, the puppets just were fantastic in that original cut. It's the first version I saw as a kid, so yeah, that nostalgia, baby. But I don't dislike the special edition changes. They are what they are. Were they needed? No, not really. I mean, what ain't broke, don't fix it, but they're fine. I mean, none of the changes here are Greedo shooting first levels of changes, so they are what they are. But yeah, I love this movie. I always have. I go back to it every year, multiple times throughout the year. It's just, yeah, I love Return of the Jedi and the entire saga. And I honestly can't wait to do the prequels because I am going to stick up for those movies super hardcore. So that's coming soon, hopefully.
This is why I love T. I can just dance on like something he loves and he doesn't care. There's no hard feelings. Some never. Folks would be really angry at me when I say some things I say.
Never.
It's time to pick one, and for me, it's really no contest. It's The Hill by like orders of magnitude, dude.
Yeah, it's The Hill for me as well. The Hill, aka not getting the sweep against Murder Bears.
To be fair, I love the Murder Bears too, just in a different way.
You know, most normal people would pick a Sidney Lumet movie over anything, but I can't do it over Return of the Jedi. Sorry. Return of the Jedi.
That's just not true. Have you not, like, been on the internet? Do you know how many people would pick fucking Empire over the Sidney Lumet film, especially this one? Please.
Probably, but...
Me and Kevin are firmly in the minority on this one. Our special this week is going to be Films in Space, Part 2. And with that in mind, and the 55th anniversary of Trek being yesterday, and having to watch Star Wars this week, I decided I'm going to pick a Trek film. The last one we watched was Wrath of Khan, which is the best. So I thought I'd go with my second favorite, Star Trek VI, The Undiscovered Country.
Nice.
But before that, next week, I'm going to go with The Last Seduction. Get our film noir on.
All right. Yeah. Joke's on you, because I don't mind watching any entry because I've already seen all of the Star Trek films before. So it's okay. I know the continuity.
Nice.
So my pick for next week, as I was picked for the ex-prison, I'm going to be nice to Tyler, I think. it's a Terrence Malick film called Knight of Cups.
Nice.
Basically, a double bill appeared on one of my streaming services with Song to Song and Knight of Cups. And I've seen Song to Song with, you know, I didn't love it, but I'd never actually watched Knight of Cups.
It'll be interesting. Knight of Cups is very much a love-it-hate flick.
I'm curious to see. I think all Malick's later works are love it or hate it for a lot of people.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah, definitely.
Oh, I was checking my Malick rankings. It wasn't, I actually really liked Song to Song. It was To the Wonder that I didn't like.
Oh, yeah. Actually, Song to Song, I think, is, that's like the one you hear about the least.
Mm-hmm.
Like, Knight of Cups has like really strong defenders. Song of Songs mostly has like, defenders. I've only saw that one like once when it first came out, so I don't even remember Song to Song.
I mean, it may have been slightly boosted by that festival glow as well, I think, because I'm pretty sure I saw that at the Edinburgh Festival. So, yeah, possibly that.
That would make sense. Knight of Cups, on the other hand, that's another one that love it or hate it, but folks are a lot more entrenched over it. That one in Tree of Life. But I think Knight of Cups is a little bit more love it and hate it than Tree of Life was.
Mm-hmm.
I always thought The New World deserved a lot more praise than it got. That's a gorgeous movie.
So we're going to get all pretentious. That's another one I can see being off-putting towards audiences. Mm-hmm. 'Cause it's too long. It's almost 3 hours, and it's so unfocused.
There's a director's cut that's like way over 3 hours. I think it's like 3 hours and 12 minutes, the Criterion version, if I'm not mistaken.
Jesus. Yeah, I mean, you know, someday if you make me watch it, I will watch it, but I'm not going to be happy.
You can find us on Twitter at Raiders of the Pod, or on Facebook, where I only remember to post on Wednesday when we're talking about Star Wars. We're on Instagram, Raiders_of_the_podcast. We have a YouTube channel where Kevin posts awesome videos every week. So subscribe, like, and comment there. And you can always email us at raidersofthepodcast@gmail.com.
Indeed. All right. And YouTube-wise, there's a competition at the moment. But I know at the moment it's for UK people only. I can only work with what I've got just now. If people like and subscribe our stuff and we become gazillionaires, then I'll send some shit to America.
Ooh.
Can't say fairer than that.
No. I mean, you know, a gazillionaire should always be an implied limitation.
Yeah.
As always, thanks for joining me. Thanks for listening. I'll talk to you guys next week.
See ya.
Yep.